Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Mary Jane Constantine, Senior Vice President for Population Health Solutions at Access Point Health, a division of HGS. Access Point Health is a population health management company that combines innovative technologies with care management services. Welcome, Mary Jane, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, David. Great to be here.
We're going to start with some definitional questions. I'm going to ask if you can briefly define population health, and then I'm going to ask you to define social determinants of health.
Sure. Well, to start with population health, it's really thinking through efforts and strategies that address the health of a covered population. It can be a town, it could be the population served by a particular medical center or provider group, or it could be the population covered by a health plan. So it's a fairly general term. Social determinants of health refer to the conditions that we're born into and that we grow up with and live with. It's a fairly broad term, but the social determinants of health, the connection in there is thinking through how those conditions affect the health of individuals and of that population.
Okay. And in your work, are you looking at particular types of populations? Is this geographically focused? Is this health plan enrollee focused? What's your frame of reference?
We typically work with health plans, sometimes state governments, but primarily with health plans. And generally, the population that we focus on are the sickest of the sick, the people with multiple comorbidities, very high risk for their condition to get worse. Although we can reach across the population of a state or of a health plan.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about what is your offering to health plans in terms of addressing social determinants of health.
Generally, organizations bring us in, as I said, to work with the sickest of the sick, and primarily through care management and care coordination. And our approach to it is a little bit different than the way that those activities have been addressed in the past, primarily because we try to identify, using artificial intelligence and predictive modeling, who among that population is most likely to get worse over time. And then as we look at that, we identify and uncover barriers to care. So this may be something as simple as tracking a mission critical medication and tracking the refill cadence. And if we identify that the patient is not refilling that medication at a level that tells us they're compliant, they're taking it as frequently as is necessary, then that gives us insight into an area where we can intervene with that individual. We also look at things like, are they keeping up with office visits with their providers? When there is a connection between the frequency with which a certain individual sees a provider and their ongoing continued health. An example of that would be somebody with chronic kidney disease. Their kidney function isn't good, and the goal is to preserve that as long as possible. And evidence shows that continuing to work with a nephrologist every 6 months, so keeping that office visit, going in and seeing that nephrologist every 6 months, results in better outcomes. So that may be an analysis that we do across the population, identify somebody with that profile and the cadence of those kinds of visits. If we see that they're not going as frequently as they should, to reach out and work with that individual. And through that outreach, and that's where we tend to uncover issues that are a barrier to care at the at that level where social determinants come into play. So it may be a transportation issue. It may be someone who's trying to maintain full-time employment, and they're afraid that if they take time off to go see the provider, that they'll either lose pay or perhaps it'll put their job in jeopardy. Those are situations where social determinants come into play and create an obstacle to someone really taking care of themselves, really following through on the care plan that their provider has set up for them.
Two questions come to mind as you're describing all of that. One is, where did these criteria come from? Is this just expert analysis, identifying what are the things that put people at greatest risk? Or is there some sort of retrospective data analysis looking at outcomes over time and seeing, oh, if we had fixed X, Y, or Z, this we may have not gone down this path with this particular patient. As we're talking about closing care gaps, how do we arrive at approaches? Is this based on data analysis? Is this based on expert analysis of the situations experienced by individual patients? How do we build these algorithms, and how are they applied?
Well, David, the way that we did it was to harness some of the power of big data and combine that with the expertise from a panel of physicians, national experts. The physicians identified known combinations of medications, of conditions, appropriate cadence of visits, those sorts of things that have been demonstrated in the literature to stabilize or prevent ED visits, hospitalizations because the condition has exacerbated. But then we also validated that on some of the vast data sets that we've collected over the last 20 plus years and worked hand in hand between examining the data and then going back to our clinical experts to really hone in on where we identified the best combination. And some of what we were looking for were situations that we knew had a very immediate impact. So certain medications are really proven to be important in maintaining long-term health, but some of them are important if taken over 20 years. Others, if you start to interrupt the medication adherence, the condition will worsen very quickly, 6 to 18 months. And those are the particular cases that we want to focus in on because of the immediacy of the effect.
Okay. So I apologize in advance, but the cynic in me would say that if your customer is the health plan, then it may make sense to look for the short-term fix as opposed to the fix to a long-term chronic condition. I recognize that these are chronic conditions that you're trying mm-hmm. to address in the short term as well. But I'm just wondering if you could help me understand sort of what's the rationale for doing the short term versus the long term, and whether there are opportunities for improved health that are being left on the table based on this focus.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, but I almost need to step back for a second. I really believe that the best approach for all of us is to get the right care at the right time. Some of the immediacy is because there is a closer correlation in terms of some of the cause and effect. And we're dealing with individuals with multiple chronic conditions, most typically. I do believe that they would agree. They're focused on, how do I feel today? Am I still going to feel good tomorrow? Am I managing my life right now? So if your whole focus is what's going to happen over the course of the next 20 years, you frankly may be overlooking the actions that can be impactful today. And if we miss those actions that have near-term consequences will never get to the 20-year consequences. Think about the difference in for someone who has 22 visits to the emergency department in a year, and we work with them to improve some of the compliance with the treatment plan that their provider has recommended, and they never go back to the emergency room again. Their life is better right now.
Have you seen in your work, or do you have visibility into the coding and payment and the sort of the movement to identify social determinants related work as its own sort of billable event on the payer side? Is this something that is, you're looking at it from a care management perspective, from a payer health plan staff perspective, or does this also feed into clinical services offered directly that might be either billable or countable as part of a budgeted payment plan?
So we identify it through a couple of means. Certainly, any time that we can find something within claims data that helps us out, that points us in the right direction, that's a real win. It means that we can be consistent across the population in identifying the same thing. So that's terrific. However, identifying the specifics about a person and the influence that a social determinant may be having on them isn't really that visible within the claims data. I will say we are seeing an increase in questions about the social environment being asked more frequently. The criticality is to get to that information and that answer. The other way that we see it is through our direct interaction with the member. One of the first things that we ask after we validated that there is something that's creating a barrier in their access to treatment or in their self-care, is why, what's going on? And through that conversation, we often are uncovering a social determinant issue or a barrier. And then the third way is really to look at some non-traditional data sources. And we're still evaluating where we can get the best information or draw the best conclusions off the information that we have. But even looking at some marketing data, we have found a correlation between lower outcomes for people who live by themselves than for people who live with family members. Oddly enough, even if the family member is a child. Now, at this point, it's still a fairly weak correlation from what we found, but these are the types of things that we continue to evaluate. And our thought is that as we refine these models, we may better be able to predict who is likely to have an even higher risk given five people with the same kind of history of claims.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Mary Jane Constantine, Senior Vice President of Population Health Solutions at Access Point Health. Mary Jane, in reading and looking into social determinants of health, one approach of the health plans and providers addressing these issues head on is to introduce things that are really not what we consider healthcare at all traditionally. You alluded to transportation issues earlier. You alluded to housing situations earlier. Are these the kinds of things that are now the province of the healthcare sector, where we're dealing with improving individuals' access to housing, access to transportation, access to fresh foods, things like that?
Absolutely. And I can think of examples of situations where the solution at the individual member level has been food insecurity resolved or a stable living situation or access to transportation. Of those three, transportation has been recognized and acknowledged certainly through Medicare, Medicaid programs for quite a period of time. And it just makes sense. If you have no ability to travel to a provider's office and telemedicine isn't an option for you, you're not going to be able to access care unless there's some consideration for transportation. I think food is perhaps not as obvious, but it's even more significant. Someone who is dealing with food insecurity is going to prioritize that over medicine, over healthcare visits, those types of things. And it absolutely must be addressed in order for some of the other treatment recommendations even to be part of the consideration for that individual.
Do you think that social determinants of health is a more important issue than it used to be, or are we focusing on it because we can, meaning because we have the data? I mean, is this more important now? Are we starting to devote more resources to this? Did we call it something else in the old days? Do we need to devote even more resources to it in the future?
So we're definitely focused on it more than we were in the past. I think it's part of an evolution of trying to understand what works and what doesn't. Many years ago, my undergraduate degree is in nursing, and as part of my training, the very first patient I lost in the hospital was an elderly woman who came in with an infection that should have been resolvable, but her nutritional status was just so poor. She was severely malnourished. Her children lived on the other side of the country, and she didn't tell them. But she was surviving off a bag of flour and some cornstarch. And she was so malnourished, she just didn't recover from what should have been a curable infection. At that time, there was no sense of connection between the health insurance that she had or the capabilities of the very good hospital system that I was working through and thinking through, you know, when we discharge somebody, do they have food at home? And should we be checking on that with all individuals? As we've gone forward and we've looked at what works, what doesn't work, why do we have a situation like the one I just described where it should have been something really pretty easy to cure, but it wasn't? We really have seen these issues, these social determinants, and the effect that they've had. I think the other impetus for some of this just comes from the World Health Organization. They really define it as the inequities between countries and with populations within a country, that inequity is a significant factor in driving the difference in the health outcomes. So more data, more experience, it's really brought this issue to the forefront.
In terms of managing population health, whether it's with a social determinants lens or otherwise, have you seen tools or technologies available now that maybe weren't in the past that are more useful in terms of implementing a successful population health management strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. Technology has really enabled us to focus more specifically on individuals. So again, harnessing that big data just in a way that we haven't been able to do before. What's also encouraging to me is some of the ways that organizations are experimenting or trying the use of social media to push out information, the use of mobile technology to outreach to individuals, to connect with them and to push information to them near real time. These are things that just have not been available over the course of the last 30 years, but we can harness now. I think that there are a number of resources, such as the ones that I just listed out, that still aren't fully utilized, still aren't fully tapped into, and we're going to continue to see more and more. Making sure that People have access to internet, to mobile phones, to texting, being able to push out SMS messaging. That's a pretty powerful tool, especially if you don't have a good phone number or a stable address for someone that you're trying to reach. So there's a lot that we can harness today we haven't been able to do before, and a lot of just really great creative strategies and ideas. And I think we'll continue to see those rapidly expand into the marketplace.
Any particular favorites that you've seen lately, whether something that you've been working on directly or that you see in some of your client organizations being successfully deployed?
You know, I think the one lesson on this, I do have some personal favorites, and I wish everybody shared my list. But the one thing that we've learned is one solution doesn't work for everybody. You have to make sure that you're reaching out, you're connecting, and you're bridging those connections in a way that works with the population you're trying to reach or you're trying to work with. Some people are completely comfortable in the whole concept of telemedicine. Others just can't get over the fact that they're on camera and they can't get past that. They'll avoid it like public speaking almost at any cost. Text works for some, it doesn't work for others. And I think if we think that there's one magic perfect strategy out there, there just isn't. I think the best strategy is to think through a range of approaches so that we're meeting people where they are, we're addressing them in the way that they're willing and comfortable and happy to engage. I really believe that cuts across whatever initiative health plans or medical centers, medical systems are trying to do.
So, Mary Jane, to wrap things up, I'll ask you my last question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
You know, it's hard for me to think through any specifics until we get to the point where there is some sort of universal coverage, whether that's a public or a private or a public-private, it just doesn't matter. As we think about addressing population health, it's inconceivable to me that we'll get to where we want to be unless we have affordable health care for everyone.
Well, there you have it, the foundational thing without which we can't really move forward. We hope we get there within the next 5 years, but who knows? A continuing conversation. Well, Mary Jane, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure, David.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.